Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of It's Not My Fault, the OASG podcast. It's not popular. We are on episode 247. My name's Helen.
My name is Justin.
Normally, we'd like to spend a little bit of time easing into the podcast, but this time we've got the twofer of Anime Expo licenses, and holy shit, there were a lot of them, and Spring Anime Wrap-Up, which was modest by my, for me, but a lot for Justin. So, yeah, Justin swears we can do this podcast in under 2 hours, which is good, because I've got something scheduled for a little less than 2 hours from now, so let's get to it!
Let's somehow do this. Oh, God. Oh, how do we do this to ourselves? But yes, we have to start with the pre-AX announcements. We've had, like, announcements happen.
Oh, God, I didn't even notice this section. You must have added these in ever. No, I went through the script, and I was practicing reading out the names, but you were still adding in, so I didn't realize that there were that many.
It's been, like I said, it's been intense script. This is what I get for not doing a script during the week, and this is what happens when you have this happen. And then, yes.
Yeah, it took you, like, several hours to put this together. Yeah. Like, just copying and pasting took several hours.
I wanted to get everything accurate, and there was some errors in the articles itself that I had to deal with. So I was like, oh, God, I gotta fix that, too. But it's what I get for, A, not doing it early enough, and then, B, obviously wanting to get some stuff that was shared over the past few days on the social media accounts. Did some of that today, and I still have to do it tomorrow. I might do one more tonight, but I'll see. But anyways, here's what was announced before AX. So you had Kodama Tales. They had their, like, little licensing week, and they announced the following titles. And funny enough, some of these, I think, were leaked a while ago, and then eventually Kodama Tales had to basically announce it. Hey, we're going to announce this eventually. Please respect that we're going to announce these at some point. Don't worry, all that good stuff.
By leaked, do you mean that people saw them on Amazon?
Yeah, the usual
pre-order
stuff. Yeah, and, it was a kind of a bigger thing, at least on Twitter, from what I remember. And they finally made a little statement about that.
Come on, guys, we're smart to this one. You should know by now.
But yeah, so here's what they announced. So they licensed Jiro Matsumoto's Beautiful Place, Shiten Akiyama's Horizon, which is, it has some backstory. I don't know if it blew up on Blue Sky, but it has a backstory on Twitter where this was originally put on Manga Dex. This was actually where the author worked with, like, I guess, a scanlation, like, scanlators.
Oh, wait, is it that one?
Yeah, I think, I guess it crossed over to Blue Sky.
Not this part, but I do remember it from before.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you might have just heard it around. But yes, this was happened back then. Obviously, the Japanese publisher was not happy about this, and that guy eventually got taken down. They got into a whole bit of discussion about piracy and obviously rights and everything like that. But yes, after all, and this happened earlier this year, so the fact that it even got announced as a license now is actually really crazy. Also, kind of weird. So this also can be considered weird news. Matt, remember to put this in the weird section. You don't really have this type of turnaround. I guess it's not really comparable to Love Bullet. But I guess somewhere in that little vein, similar vein, we have a Japanese, like, author just getting their work, like, kind of mini viral, and eventually it got enough attention to get published in English. And this is another example right here. So yes, Kodama Tales is bringing that over at some point. I think early next year or later this year, one or the other. They've licensed Hanaichi Nozaki and Shiro Yoshida's Casino Gui, Hiroshi Takahashi's Crows, and Tetsuo Hara's Cyber Blue, which they're going to release in hardcover edition. Don't think it said paperback or anything like that, but I think it should be hardcover and probably digital at this point in time.
And then Crossed Hearts licensed 4 BL manga for their BL Brush Club imprint, Yakai Hiragi's The Bird in the Cage Dreams, which is also labeled Rocho.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure based on how it was worded if it was a Japanese style, but it didn't seem like a Japanese style. They literally just English. They really localized the heck out of it. So I just left it in there.
Okay, so if you type in any combination of those words, it should appear online if you were looking for it. On Chanuki's Until We Fall in Love, Chikuwabu Tano's The King of Owls and His Troubled Attendant, and Yuhi Shinonome's A Gaze Like Lightning.
Abrams Kana licensed Kotonagi's Hotel Astrology book. So we got another. I think it's like the, maybe their first bookish title. I don't think it's a manga. I don't think it's a manga. This is their first book title for their line. They've licensed and publisher Bubble Zine had announced they've licensed Suhiro Maru's New National Kid. So it's gonna come out at some point in the future. That's pretty much all the manga announced before AX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have one anime announcement before AX. Now, digitally in the US, it will be on Blu-ray in September. G-Kids is going to be releasing the Chow? Yeah, Chow anime film. C-H-A capital O, I think. I don't think that's supposed to be a zero.
Well, why don't you open the link, Helen?
I did, and I'm still unsure. I think that's an O, but not a zero. But for some reason in English, we have decided those two characters are going to look not nearly identical.
Gotta find a way to get that cross in there. Just get the cross in there.
Yeah, you gotta do the little thing where you make it clear that it's a zero, not an O, because you would never draw a line through an O, of course.
Now on to the license that happened during Anime Expo, and I don't know who sent it online. I mean, on Helen's Discord, but Helen sent that message to me online, and we're going to cover it somehow, whoever's listening. We're going to cover all the news that happened and announcements. We're going to do it. Somehow,
someway. Oh, my friend who is concerned for us.
they've, like, J-Novel Club, they had a ton of print announcements. But most, here's what they've announced in terms of just new stuff. Suta Sunihara's and Lemon Natsumi's Sorry, Darling, But You Won't Kill Me Again. It's going for the J-Novel Heart imprint. Yuno Yosakura and Emoshi's A Young Maiden's Growing Pains. I Reincarnate and All I Got was 100 times stat buff. Nora Yatsuda and Arutera's God Sleeps in Seafoam. Manzi Mazi and Yuya's A Wicked Lady's Guide to Accidentally Saving the Kingdom. Shishui, Hazuki, and Kukuri's Abakumai Elegant Villainous. Time to Enjoy My Second Life to the Fullest. This is going for the J-Novel Heart imprint. Kenoji and Reita's.
And the manga for that one is on Manga Up.
Okay. And
I've tried it. It's not very great. It's kind of meh by villainous standards.
Kenoji and Reita's Father Have You Sinned and Assassin in Priest Robes. Misa Oi and Yo Hihara's Genius in the Library. This bookish rookie will save the day. Long Itsumi's Last Summer Sparkle manga. This is going for J-Novel Night, and this is also another J-Novel Night. Bill Bates BL imprint. Ichi Ichikawa's Reset to Reboot. Most of their announcements are also print-related. No one knows Child Tribulations, and I'm telling you, Helen, I looked at almost all of these and saw how many reviews they got on Amazon just to be like, this is actually popular or not? Is it justifiable to put it in print? Maybe two titles in here. I'm just like, okay, this didn't get an anime bump, so why would you print this? And another title is like, But then you look at the ratings for Child Tribulations, it's like, I am sad. Anyways, they're going to read the following print. Puny Chance from Villainous the Healer. I Know the Cheat to Change My Fate manga and light novel. Now, this is one ton I know for sure definitely has the ratings to get a print release, at least a light novel. Not a fan of the art for the manga for this, but I guess people will want to pick it up anyways. But I know for light novel for sure, okay, that definitely deserved. And then this other title,
I thought the manga art was cute, although I never read the light novel, so I don't know if the light novel art.
No, it's
like.
More like, I feel like it's kind of rough in some areas, especially when it actually does any sort of action. Just a little rough. Jan Alexis, It's Tough Being a Necromancer light novel. To be more clear, this is the J-Novel Club original light novel runner-up title, and then I put this one in print now, just like they've done a couple of the other ones. They've licensed, already gonna bring a print, Shoulders, Min Max, and TRPG Building on the World. Kagura and Matabo is A Livid Lady's Guide to Getting Even. How I Crushed My Homeland with My Mighty Grimoires. Which is totally time for the anime that's coming out, I think this week. Probably this week. Then again, the print's gonna come out, like, I think November, so it's just the timing of it. Miyori Kayamoto's This Despicable Duke Settles His Affairs. This is J-Novel Lights. I think this is going to be the first Prince BL title from that line. Kazuki Amamiya's Hayabara Teenage New Game. Which, thinking anime, I am still shocked this is getting a print release because I don't think it really buffed up the digital. I don't think it like a Water Magician like bump. So I'm saying, I think this is why I'm a little surprised at this one.
I mean, the anime for that one wasn't even very good, so I guess people tried watching the Water Magician anime and went, oh god, this sucks, I gotta go to the source material.
Yeah, but it even, like, for this...
Fans can come at me.
No, it's just that, like, from what I even, like, heard from just Sam or Madison, this was at Anime New York City last year, they were just saying, like, the anime helped pump that up a bit. Maybe it was because it was meh, like you said, but I think they generally, there are enough people that liked it enough to just want to try the light novels. I don't think this is the case with High Bar or Teenage the King. That's just my theory.
I know.
All right, go ahead.
I know he has said on live streams before that basically any anime will give them a bump. It's just some bumps are bigger than others, you know. Some are kind of small, and some are Apothecary Diary sized.
Or I guess Water Magician size, somewhere in that middle.
I think he said Apothecary Diaries increased, like...
Yeah, it was a big amount.
I think by, like, double digits?
Yeah, it was pretty... It was big. They've licensed... Already gonna bring in Prince Furo, Yumbo, and Quintus. The Frontier War Begins with Zero Subjects, Tales of Blue Diaz and Yonkin. Alna, manga, not the light novel. Abyss, Enoshima, Pochi, Aoya, and Nero Paso's What's With the Bag, Kamiyama-san. This is a title I'm not sure why they're bringing in print. I guess because they can. I just don't think it's very good. But that's just neither here nor there. They're going to bring over Hajime, Nahara, Tako, Demise, and Hattori Kyoka's A Cave King's Road to Paradise, Climbing to the Top with My Almighty Mining Skills manga, Ryu, No Te Tono, and W's Namba Demon Lord, Happily Ever After with My Monster Girls in my Dungeon manga, Kasuki Minamoto's All Eyes on Death Yashikun. No, that's me, not my characters. I should have put this here, but there's also a J-Navo Knight title, or part of the imprint. And they're going to bring over...
That's really fast, too, because they just started putting out that manga.
Yep. Then Konosuura Nori's The Genesis, 3 years after the dungeons appeared. This is the light novel. I think this is when I was surprised they bring in print, but hey, whatever. If they think it'll work that way, it'll work that way.
All right, my turn now to try to read off a whole bunch of titles. Oh good, this is a section I actually practiced. From Seven Seas, we had a reasonable number of licenses in comparison to some of these other publishers. They are bringing over Odoro Dorothy's I See You, Aizawa-san, Daisuke Itabashi's The Journey of a Dark Elf with Fading Powers. This is already being put out digitally on K-Manga, for anyone who wants to use that mess of an app. Kotoko and Kei Kunanomi's This Time Around, My Lovesick Hero Will Keep Me Alive, if I'm lucky. Itsumi Narita's That Girl I'm Interested In is a Maid from the Abyss. No word on whether or not she is made in the Abyss. Azusa Sakamoto's I Reincarnated as the Villain Commander of an Order of Knights. They are bringing over both the manga and the light novels. The manga is drawn by Fuji. The light novel is illustrated by... I'm not sure if you pronounce this Koda Amazon or Code Amazon.
I go with Code Amazon.
Either way,
I go with Code Amazon.
Yeah, it's like, hang on, this could be a pun in English, but I'm not sure it's a pun in Japanese. Anyway, the light novel is digital only for the moment. Hijiki's Hate Me But Let Me Stay, Manager, and Otoha. This is being announced a couple of months after they announced another spinoff in this mini franchise, I guess. The previous spinoff was Hate Me But Let Me Stay, Mr. Asanagi and Mr. Yanagi. Dakken and Enta Shiho's The Suspects of Necromancy. This is a light novel, so it'll be going to their airship line. Kenoji and R_Ringo's My Sword Saint Master's Too Cute to Live With. This is a Ghost Ship imprint title, which means it is spicy. I looked at that cover, and I wondered if the person understood how shoulders and boobs fit together. I also have a lot of questions about how you pronounce that pen name. And finally, coming over to their Siren audiobook imprint, they will be releasing Yoru Sumanino's Distorted I Love You, which is going to be narrated by both Paul Date and Ari Saltini. To which I must complain, oh no, now I've got to figure out how to pronounce fucking Italian for this podcast. Because I'm pretty sure that's an Italian last name.
I should have checked this out. I had no idea we have two Kanoji titles from two different publishers in this one section. From J Novel Club, they had the, where was it? The Father, Have You Sinned? And now we have this one from Ghost Ship, My Sword Saint Master. And I'm like, wait, how did we have this happen? How? Publishing. All right. On to Kodan.
Hang on, was the Father Have I Sinned, was that a...
It's J Novel Club.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, was that J Novel Night, you know, were they kind of going for, like, you know, BL and Het, you know? I'd respect somebody who's, you know, working in more than one genre there, but,
Let's go with this. Kodansha's announced as an AX, so they license Hitoshi Iwaki's Her Story. Right in time for the anime to come out in 2027, Niki Asada's...
This is the mangaka of Parasite, for folks who don't recognize the name.
Niki Asada's A Serenade of Spring Thunder. This is also on K-Manga. I think a couple of these on... Actually, we could do this. Not all these on K-Manga, I think, but a couple of these are. Teki Yasuda's Mither. Okay, and I'm going to the K-Manga. I'm like, okay, this is another K-Manga title. Yoshi Damaru's Dig It. It makes me think of Booker T and Dig It. Can you dig it, sucker? That's basically what it makes me remind me of.
I was thinking of the Pokemon Diglett.
Okay, you got Pokemon on the brain, I got wrestling on the brain. Kazuto Mihara's Interstellar Violin, Ko Fumimura's Manga Lover, Baton's Vitali Game, this is also on K-Manga. Osamu Nishi's Welcome to Demon School, Irumakun, Devilish Tales, Kenigo Story, Hanayako Honomi and Chiharu Nara's Blaze of Flesh and Blood, Tsuji Hanabusa's Drawn Deep, Reki Tasaki, Nezu Usugumo, and Gigi is the Chronicles of Lin Din. There is like a period, this double period in one of the E's, but I can't really pronounce dude like that easily.
Yeah, it's the double E you sometimes see over like Nordic words, and yeah, I also have no idea how you pronounce that.
You have maybe one of these days, what are our classes you to take how to pronounce these type of words? We're on a podcast, we gotta know how to pronounce things properly.
Listen, we say this, and yet we're having to regularly pronounce things from, like, at least four different languages, and now we're adding in, like, Italian and Nordic today.
Here we start. Deluxe hardcover edition of Osamu Tezuka's Phoenix. So basically, they snatch Viz's chain in public. Really sad what Viz has become, and just not wanting to print or bring back Phoenix in any capacity. Okay, I'm sort of kidding. I feel like...
Yeah, because it hasn't been in print in, like, 20 years.
At this point, Viz has really, like, thought about Tezuka in forever. Obviously, Kodansha...
To be fair, DMP kind of had a...
That too.
...stranglehold, yes, on stuff for a while. Yeah, that was a while ago.
That, Digital Manga Guild Publishing, all that, they had a huge, huge stockpile of Tezuka stuff, and they pretty much had the rights to that for a long time.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Say it again.
I think they knew a guy. I think they knew like the vice president of the company that was handling Tezuka's estate. I think I remember that chatter back in the day.
Right, that makes sense. So in theory, you can't really blame Viz for not really wanting to work with that moving forward. And then again, they Kodansha, I think also on the vertical imprint, they're kind of been like bringing more Tezuka back. So this is more of like a natural step forward for them to do this, but it's just still kind of unfortunate or a little funny that just Viz said that was their thing eons ago, but then I just don't have the right set anymore.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was posted on Twitter, but over on Blue Sky, Ben Applegate of Kodansha did a thread talking about this release. He's been working on it, and he was talking about we're going off of what's, I guess, kind of considered like the ultimate edition in Japan, but ours is going to be slightly different because... theirs is kind of made to like mimic the magazine releases, but we're having to do some things differently. It's an interesting thread. I'll shoot you a link. I don't think his account is locked. I think you can see it, even though you don't have an account on Blue Sky.
Okay, and I'll probably,
like some of the publishers we are going to be mentioning.
Oh boy, Helen's just really. She's just like, why are you? It's 2026.
Listen, if you are,
if you're a serious publisher, why don't you have a Blue Sky account?
If you want to make money, you need to know how to talk to people. We are not making money over here. That's our excuse.
We have Collab Official Art Book Color Gold, 1989-2024, and they're gonna thing over June and Saka and Kamami Shirahama's Witch Hat Atelier special stories. This is, I think, all planned for spring 2027, so look out for that in that particular window.
Yeah, and I am actually excited for the Chronicles of Leland Dead, however you say it. There's a scanlated version of the first chapter floating around, which I have read, and I liked it so much I actually found the rods and was trying to translate it using my phone camera, but that is a very slow-going process. So I will be glad to have an alternative to that. Alright, from Yen Press's Anime Expo panel, we have licenses for Hagane Kurodome and Kururu's The Chef of the Adventurer's Tavern, Koko Shirakawa's A Flower in Black Crude Clothes. Justin has a note that this is apparently a sequel to Raven of the Inner Palace, which I had wondered when I saw the cover art, because I thought, wow, that looks really similar.
Yeah, I just saw some people saying it on Twitter. I'm like, I couldn't really verify it, because it's right now when publishing online, it's just very annoying. So I couldn't really find it. But yeah, I saw some people talk about it on Twitter.
Yeah. Hiroyuki Kitazume's Mobile Suit Zeta Gundam Define. I will say that this is kind of being positioned as like Mobile Suit Gundam The Origin, except for Zeta, but he's not very good at drawing. My friends have been sharing examples from it, and it's not good. dude seems to just be using, like, 3D models of the Gundams and just placing them on a page with no thought. But in better-looking news, they also license Hollow Takeguchi's Chihaya Restart, Samesuki's The Lowly Elf is the Black-Hearted King's Plaything. There's no note for it because Yen Press doesn't really do imprints, but that is definitely a BL cover. Naochi's Takane-san and Urashi-chan. Harikamo's The 11th Cat is Nene. Hajime Takeuchi and Hiromu Kitano's Planarian Humans.
We have Square.
And then moving over to Square Enix, they announced Daisuke Hagiwara's Not Quite Love, Yutaka's My Classmate James, Mosuke Mataku's Inuta, My Canine Classmate. I know that one's on Manga Up. I think a lot of these are. Ume Koshida's Daughter of the Dragon God, Kome Fujishika's Supervillain Boy, Gen Kotsu Kumano, Jojo Uema, and Ryushi Tajima's Overpowered and Underpaid, an OP Swordmaster turns hit streamer, Gojai's Kasu Reach, which sounds like a euphemism for people who go to Katsukan, and Ume Matsutake and Komikan Matsumoto's Tamagawa Is That You?
We have Tokyo Pop coming in with a couple licenses. Today, actually. Literally today, like, they announced these. So Natsu Bitakawa's Love at First Howl, Misaki Sato's Supigo Shinonome's The Reclusive Consort of the Weekend Empire, Sneaking Out of the Rear Palace to Be a Court Official, Nana Aokawa's Higher Attendant All Guys Mixer, Omnibus Edition, pretty much the shocker of the day to me. Because I'm like, Square Enix didn't want this. Yen Press didn't want this.
Yeah, I was like, hang on. I think I've seen that one on Manga Up.
Tokyo Pop and Square Enix. I think this is the first one. I did not see that coming at all. And they licensed Ayaka Matsumoto's Mr. Mitsuya's Plant Feeding. And then we got a couple.
And I know that they were once again talking about their upcoming Princess Eye Omnibus Kickstarter. It's not launched yet. Also, apparently they have decorated their booth at Anime Expo with a wraparound for Princess Eye, according to a friend of mine who had the great misfortune of being at Anime Expo this year. I say the great misfortune, but apparently LA is cooler than the majority of the country right now, so maybe he's gotten the last
laugh.
That's
actually pretty funny. That's actually pretty funny. Yay, climate.
It's been so hot here.
Yay. We also have...
I've been sleeping on an air mattress in my living room since Thursday night just to try to keep cooler. It's bad, Justin. I'm sure it's bad for you guys, too.
It's bad, but thankfully AC works, fan works, so I'm lucky in that regard.
Last night was the first night my apartment got to below 80 degrees since Wednesday.
All right, we got a couple of titles from Dark Horse, which kind of restrained, really, when you think about it, compared to everybody else. They got another Kenji Suda title, The Sky Is But One Roof for the World. Kanada Go Tanabe Taito, H.P. Lovecraft's The Haunter of the Dark. They also going to bring over Yoshitaka Amano's Zabel Den. This is actually called Second Edition. I'm trying to remember what they did our first edition of this, or when our first edition of this came out. But yeah, this is the second edition of it, and they're going to release it. They're going to add another title to their deluxe art cover line, Hirooku's Gantz. So at least it's starting next year, so look out for all that. And nice hardcover version for Gantz and a couple of these other titles, just to get them out next year.
For some reason, I thought they already had Gantz in hardcover.
What did they have?
Also, just saying, they should really make the hardcover be kind of like black and shiny with random baubles on there, like the suits they wear in Gantz. Alright, so Manga Mavericks had a couple of announcements. Coming out of nowhere, Kaoru Kurimoto and Yumiko Igarashi's The Sword of Paros, which is going to be a deluxe hardcover edition. This is the author of Gwyn Saga, so this is technically a prequel to Gwyn Saga. Yumiko Igarashi is the creator of things like Candy Candy and Lady Georgie, which have never gotten manga licenses over here. So, my friends are yelling about sword lesbians, so I'm excited for that one quite a bit. Just coming out of nowhere. And they also licensed Quick Obake's Motionless and Kazuhiko Shimamoto's Hero Company, which looks solid, but I am more excited about the sword lesbians. And then with a couple of titles which are going to sound familiar, Omoi has a combination of new licenses and new partnerships. So on the licenses side, they have licensed Mai Matsuda's Walking Home With You, Kakeru Kakemaru's Shonen Racket, Shunsuke Sorato's Natsumi and Natsumi More Perfume, and they are also going to be bringing over the Sword of Paros digitally, you know, kind of like sub-license from Manga Mavericks. And they're also going to have more catalog editions from publishers like Red String Manga and Square Enix and Books, and a few more from Manga Mavericks. We're not going to read off all of them because
it's a lengthy amount.
Again, we are trying to keep this podcast in our 2 hours.
Yes, somehow, some way. We have Blue Petal with a couple announcements. We have Masashi Kurimoto's Last Heaven and Reika Suzumi's Black World Is Dying in White Chalk. I think Last Heaven's BL and Black World Is Dying in White Chalk is your...
Yeah, I think you're right.
We have Manjan Pros. They announced they've licensed Sayaka Okada and Kazuo Maekawa's Golden Sakura, and Katake and Yoshiki Suda's Mild Tale of the Glassy Sea. And I know you want to take this one, but I will mostly get this one because it's really quick. Because it's been a while since we actually talked about Kuma in general.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing about the Mahjong Pros one is that I don't know which title, but apparently one of these was so obscure it did not even have an entry on manga updates.
Oh yeah, that's right, you were saying that. Yeah, that the power... This is rare, it rarely happens. Manga updates usually have everything, but on occasion...
I have encountered things in the past that are too obscure for manga updates, but it's not a common thing. That is a exhaustively thorough online resource of titles and where one can find scanlations for said titles.
It always makes you wonder. It was so long ago. It was just one or two titles that I'm just like, where is the entry on manga updates? I want to find this. Jeez, it was probably since like Manga Planet or stuff like that, where there's just no entries for it. It was like serious. But Kuma, they announced they licensed Ogretsu Tanaka's Memory Prince. So at some point in the near future, that will come out. Hopefully, when things do not get in their way. I meant to put this also in the script as well. But I think a while ago we had Alpha Polis titles getting released in print. I'm just like, so they got put out in print? That's interesting. As it turns out, DEPA is helping them put it out in print. Not changing the localization, or they're not involved in the localization of it. So whatever you see, I guess the Alpha Manga app is going to be what's on the print release. They're just helping distributing it, it looks like. So yeah, that was, I think, the other news that came out, aside from just general stuff like what's going on with your releases and why is it taking so long, and yeah, lots of things in the world are affecting releases at the moment for them. And we have like, what, three people working for the company? There you go.
Yeah, and as a reminder, Dempa is actually a spin-off or imprint of Kuma. So,
in case we're trying to figure out what the connection is. Other way around, because Dempa is really like a spin-off-ish of Faku. And then Dempa has Kuma on the side.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry, that's what I meant. God, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I was thinking the fucky one. And I was thinking, oh yeah, Kuma. Kuma's the fucky one. Nope. Right. Anyway. There's too many titles to talk about, folks, and we're not done yet. From Inklore, they announced that they have licensed Tomoko Yamahashi's Ikkoku Nikki manga, aka Journal with Witch, which is quite exciting. Folks might remember there was a kerfuffle a couple months ago where people thought it had been licensed by Seven Seas, but that was eventually traced back to somebody likes to do a fake licensing announcement every year, and for some reason...
I have no idea how you fall for that. How?
Well, so the thing is that they always make it look really official, and for some reason they do not fucking keep it to the private Discord they are in with friends. They decide to put it on social media as well. So that was in question for a while, but it's kind of funny since the person on Twitter who was tweeting about Inklore's panel and all of this, Justin and I weren't there, so we can't confirm this for ourselves, but it sounds like they've been in the process of licensing this, you know, from licensing to localization for 2 years, you know, at least since they were working on it before the anime was officially announced. So I wonder what they must have thought about seeing, you know, those rumors going around.
Yeah, and you've got a more definitive answer by accident. Cross Hearts was like answering questions, and one of the questions they answered is about pursuing Ikkoku Nikki, and then they shouldn't have responded to it, but they basically said that somebody did pick it up because they were pursuing it, but they got the permission to delete it.
Oh, when did the...
Yeah, it was...
When was that from?
Last month, where Cross Hearts was like impressed.
Okay, I think I
missed it. Yeah, it was on Twitter. I don't know if they... I think you were talking about the...
Yeah, I don't think they have a blue sky. I think that's part of the problem.
One of Helen's enemies, because they don't have a blue sky account. But yeah, it happened on...
They do. Oh, and they even are posting. Hang on, I'm going to go follow them.
Okay, there you go. But I don't know if they answered on blue sky, because I don't know if anybody asked, or they just decided that the answer was there. But on Twitter, at least, they answered that question. They shared that answer, and that got deleted, but then Manga Alerts, and probably some other people picked it up. And said that Ikkoku Nikki did get picked up. Somebody has it. We just didn't know who. And now the rumors are over. One of the best anime of 2026 now has its adaptation picked up, and it's gonna come next year. I am hype, very hyped. And it was so funny because Hell was just telling me to just get their source and post it on Blue Sky, please. Just do it.
Yeah, since you sent me the link to people posting it from Twitter who are at Anime Expo, and I said, put it on Blue Sky now, you can scoop everybody else, and I assure you, I want to see my feed go nuts. And yes, my feed did go nuts with a number of people sharing it in Discords going, fucking finally! So yay. And then from another publisher that starts with Ink, Inkpop has licensed Noho's My Neighbor Yokai. I know this one had an anime last year, but I think the title was slightly different. And then Justin has apparently not realized that I snuck some webtoon licenses in here. So Ise Press, imprint of Yen Press, has licensed Dakuto's Legroom, that is BL, OAN, and Logos, Philomena the Fake. No, Philomel the Fake. I know that one is on Tapas. And Saisa's Footprints in the Snow. Legroom and Footsteps in the Snow might be on some other services. I am just not immediately familiar.
I am trying to keep this podcast on two hours, you know, but, you know, ever like this doesn't help.
Listen, I took like 3 minutes there. I took less time than you take to talk about Detective Conan on any given podcast.
And then there was a couple anime-related announcements. So, you know, you may have seen the Green Yuri. That's going to go on Crunchyroll, and it's going to be a big one. We had a couple of other stuff like Black Clover's Turning, that's not new. We had Mushoku Lago that got announced that's going to go on High Dive, all that stuff. But we mostly don't really talk about anime streaming that much because at some point we will know it's streaming on the service. So yeah, we keep it in the streaming news section. But if we did have Anime EO come out of nowhere, or I guess not out of nowhere, they had a panel, I guess, and they had announcements. So they licensed Sakon the Trilogist. it's fascinating that they're bringing this over, because I remember thinking about this eons ago when I was in my I love Death Note, I love Bakuman phase, and I'm like, I need any Takeshi Obata work to get over here somehow. So I'm pretty sure I had seen Sekkon at some point. Obviously, at the time, it was not, I don't think it was licensed or anything like that, or streaming anywhere. So bringing this back is a nostalgia bomb in a different way for me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. They licensed Drucker and the Dugout. We're going to do a 4K remaster of the episode original OVA of 80 Police Files. It's going to be Amigo's first UHD Blu-ray disc release. They licensed Rescued from Nice America, House of Five Leaves. And they licensed Baby and I. They later shared that that's actually a tentative title. They're going to see if they could go with Baby and Me as the final plan title, but I guess if they couldn't name it immediately, there may be some approvals needed to go with that. So we'll have to see how that goes when it comes out in the near future.
And people on Blue Sky dug up articles Justin Savakis, head of Anime Ego, had written on ANN decades ago, talking about how no one would ever license Drucker in the Dugout or Baby and I. His one on Baby and I is from 1998. Like, that is how old that article was. So, clearly he has been like, if no one else will license it, I will.
I can do it. I have the power now. Let me do it.
I have the bank account. I have the infrastructure, you know.
Hey, you gotta respect the dedication, you know. Sometimes you gotta respect it.
I know that he is only authoring the Blu-ray disc. It's not like every Blu-ray disc is like manufactured in his apartment, but I do have this mental image in my head of him just like mentally of him like manufacturing every single Drucker in the Dugout disc in his living room or whatever.
All right, that's all the AX announcements somehow, Helen. I don't know how we did it. We just rushed through some of it, but we did it somehow.
All right, so we do have a little bit of streaming news, although I don't think any of this is actually announced at AX. Let's see. Justin is happy that this has been finally announced. Demon Slayers in the Indie Castle Part 1 is going to be streaming on Crunchyroll on a specific date.
It was in front of you, but I changed the article. It's July 28th.
Yeah. 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 I don't care. That's why I was not caring about the date. But yes, we finally got an announcement for that. Akira is going to get a 4K screening in theaters in September. Evangelion, Death, True, Squared, and Rebirth is going to screen on July 21st, and End of Evangelion will screen on July 22nd. Both of those, I think, are going to be by G-Kids. Oh, and Crunchyroll is doing the Akira screening. And Remal is once again going to have an anime on their YouTube channel that we are all going to completely forget to check out. They are going to be streaming My Stepmother and Stepsisters Aren't Wicked.
It's gonna be great, hell, if I'm really enjoying my stepsister and stepsisters, and I somehow go on vacation for like 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden I go to YouTube, 1 week only limited, you can't watch any more episodes of this show.
Oh, for a second I thought you were saying this like you have stepsisters, and I'm like, listen, Justin, of the two people in this podcast, I am the one with actual step-siblings.
Okay. I'm literally just talking about the anime, and we somehow went to step-siblings and all this stuff. How's this happening?
I literally have two stepsisters.
Wasn't even freaking it up. Ugh.
I'm not in a Cinderella situation, folks. Don't worry about it.
All right. We have Spring Anime 2026 final thoughts, Helen. We have final thoughts of a pretty good overall season. Just lots of stuff lots of anime that aired. I think from a quality standpoint, it's like, it was fine, I think. I think that's what I'm going to go with, I think. As Helen sent me something on Discord, maybe.
No. Wasn't me who sent anything.
Right, somebody else. All right. Whatever. But anyways, it was a solid season, I think. Solid season.
Yeah, I definitely did not watch as many things as I wanted to, but, you know, they will just go on the never-ending backlog list. And we've got a couple of overlaps. Do you want to start with that, or do you want to start with some of the ones that you watched but
as
I didn't?
As always, I'm going, since I guess I have four of the shows, I will naturally go from worst to first, as usual.
That's how this is organized.
Yeah, generally speaking. And obviously, some are obviously better than others. some are technically in the same bracket, but I haven't really specified. Just know that if you're going forward, and I'll obviously elaborate, that means you probably did a good job this season. Angel Next Door, supposed to be rotten season 2, did not do a great job. It wasn't just one of the, like, it's funny because we go through Waifu Simulator 2000 or with this show, with how saturated it is, how literally you could say nothing really happens between our two main characters. But at the same time, I feel like the first season of Angel Next Door literally did have something going for with Amani and My Hero. I guess the fact that they were just like the usual popular girl with the loner and all that stuff, at least they had something. But they got together and they have apparently nothing in the second season. And then the first episode for season two, it kind of was like looking great. I feel like energy was actually really working really well. So I'm like, okay, it actually looks like it leveled up. Project number 9 got something going. And then it aired the next like 11 episodes. And things just was like kind of boring visual wise. It reminded me of season 1. They went back to that dark couch again where they had their discussions. They had some interesting stuff where at some point there was like, come on, I do want to get freaky with each other. Let's do it. We can do it. We had that happening.
Justin's like, please, God, something happened.
But and they had like this like school thing that happened, the usual school festivals and everything. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's cool. But I think the friction that was, or the sweetness that worked in season 1 just kind of was over. I think it was too sugary in season 2. Too sugary. And it didn't work out in his favor. So from that standpoint, it didn't work out. And from a production standpoint, it didn't work out either. So yeah, it was kind of disappointing. Just really, really poor. I'm not sure Project Number 9 really saw what really is going on with the light novel, but it was very disappointing season 2, that is for sure.
It's funny, you talk about nothing happening, and yet I have noticed you do not have Reincarnated as a Slime season 4 on your list. Or is that one still
ongoing?
It's ongoing,
but it also, it actually does more. Way more.
Oh.
Especially visual-wise. Like, that's the thing. You could always get away with nothing happening if you actually make an effort direction-wise, visual-wise, which season 4, part 1 of Slime is doing. I was way more interested in what they did in season 4 than season 3. And then obviously it eventually came to a head where you have the Maribel battle happening. So personally, like, you don't even want to compare this to Angel Next Door. We're not even in the same planet. That's how bad the direction and visuals were for season 2 of Angel Next Door. Just not even the same stratosphere. And then yeah, season 4 of Slime is ongoing, so I'm not going to talk about that until it finishes in this summer.
Which is also why Sentence of a Bookworm is not on either of our lists. Also because I am still very behind, since I still need to buy more light novel volumes so I can read before I get to episodes. And I am just going to briefly touch on 100 Scenes of Awajima, since I'm not yet done with it. I'm only 4 episodes away from the ending, so I do intend to finish. I just have not had time to do it since, as I mentioned before, it focuses on a lot of different characters. And the whole story is about their relationships to each other and their relationships to the school, Awajima, that they all have some sort of connection to. Most are students, although some of them are friends of people who were students. And so just trying to keep track of all of the characters across multiple time periods means that it's not an anime I can have on in the background while like working on knitting or something like that. I kind of got to pay attention to it a lot. And unfortunately, my current knitting pattern is also something I cannot kind of do absentmindedly. It's a little bit of a pain in the ass, frankly. So I'm kind of having to pay a lot of attention to that as well. So I'm planning on finishing it up like this week, next week, and I'll just talk about my final thoughts once we get to it. Although I doubt that the last 4 episodes are going to change my thoughts very much, which is that I like the vibe, but I really wish that the character designs were just more detailed or more distinct. It doesn't feel like a case where it's like, oh, the anime isn't properly adapting Tako Shimura's designs or anything. I feel like the original mangaka simply came up with a very large cast that was beyond her ability to individually illustrate all the characters. And once again, it's a little hard to follow a show if you're having to squint at the screen and being like, okay, which character with dark eyes and short dark hair are we following this time? Because I can think of five of them who could theoretically be this person. Yeah. Actually, I had mentioned before that it might be a little easier to follow in manga form, because then it's easier to flip back and forth. I also wonder if it might actually be easier to follow in live action form. And you know that's bad when I'm saying it, because I am partially face blind. So if I'm saying that, you know it's a little bad.
So the following time I'm going to talk about weren't bad, and I will obviously see more of it, but there weren't, like, top of the line, totally impressive, all that stuff. So starting with Mission Yozakura Family Season 2, this is going to get a part 2 in the fall, and obviously we still got more of the crazy Yozakura family to follow, and as they got to resolve the situation with their founder, who's just crazy. There's obviously still more a deeper, obviously, twist within the whole family that they're still unaware of, or particularly a particular anime they're aware of, but you're aware of for the manga. The general issue is just that how Silver Link's adapting is just kind of dry, meh, a little bit. Some parts where it's just, you can see the effort, but then otherwise, just sometimes it's just like kind of bland, and just like, it could be more effort here with this design or this action here. This part could have been a little bit better, because I find the characters really interesting. They're all generally distinct, but just something about how it's just being adapted visually is just not really clicking more often than not. So it's fine. I'm curious if the part 2 will change my thoughts on the general franchise, but I think it's still kind of like a letdown compared to the manga. We have most heretical last boss.
Justin doesn't have a 3-episode rule. He has a 3-season rule.
As long as you're just not completely boring me or just really bad production-wise or whatever, I will probably watch. Though you entertain me in some ways. And then again, since I read the manga, I just kind of like checking in with it. So yeah, that's fine. We have most heretical last boss, last boss queen season 2, which is a shocking return. Because I don't know if the first season did that well. But they guess they well enough to do a season for I can't remember what my head is actually the main OLM studio or just a side studio for them, but yeah, they're part of production for it. I actually kind of liked that a little bit because they kind of did that quote unquote read the light novel see what happened part, because they kind of ended like a little bit massive, or not really massive cliffhanger, but there's like a potential battle that's about to happen, but we don't get to see that battle. So it kind of knocked it down a little bit because of that. But otherwise, it's more of the same. Where you have Pride again, trying not to act like her actual villainous self from the game, where she does really unspeakably cruel things. But she actually does great things, like, oh, this prince that ends up getting tricked by her brothers, or by his brothers, into getting drunk enough to not be where he's supposed to be in the kingdom, causing the kingdom to actually eventually shun him away, which eventually does lead to the kingdom pretty much dying off because you have two incompetent brothers ruling the kingdom. But she averts that because of her game knowledge. So you have stuff like that happening. You have really some fun stuff happening. I think, again, visual-wise, it's okay. It's not stand out. It just does enough. The dub is still going for this. I've been watching the dub as well. So that's still going on, continuing into the summer season. So I'll still be watching the dub at least, but the series sub has been done. So just like, it'll be nice to relive it. But I just knocked it out because I'm not a fan of. It can work out sometimes, and sometimes it can be bold. Like Talis Nana did that. Where there was no really good stopping place for that, but so I understand it. But like, it's always such a go with that. We had to continue to read the source material type of endings. I don't think it worked out well for Last Boss Queen, so I kind of down a bit. It could have been worse, but just like, I'm not a fan of it. But it's still pretty good, or pretty solid. We have Marriage Toxin, which I kind of have a love-marriage relationship with the manga itself, so not surprisingly I have a love and man relationship with the anime too. Bones did a good job making it look great though, I will say that. It's just like right now it's in this phase of going through all the girls for Geralt to get really with. And again, it says you have an assassin that's not really quote unquote assassinating most of his opponents. So not really too many deaths. You have near deaths that happen. Some do die, but not as often as you think in an assassin manga. But then again, it's mostly focused on the fact that it's a shonen series with a queer...
I was going to say, it is a weekly shonen jump series.
It's not a weekly shonen jump. It's actually Jump Plus.
Close enough.
It's a mix of queer characters in a shonen series that kind of does its own thing. It's no quote-unquote overarching plot. It's not enough that you're just trying to see if Geralt can find his one true girl in a kind of messed up way. I say messed up because how are you fighting her? How are you fighting girls when you're trying to take these type of assassination jobs? How?
Listen, I remember from reading a little bit of the manga that the girls he's meeting are also in some pretty fucked up jobs. So,
yeah, it's all family things and everything. Like I said, it's just lots of things are intriguing, but I just don't feel like it works in a cohesive way. So it's kind of mixed as to how it works out. I think it's either love or hate it. For me, it's just I love it, and sometimes I think it's eh. But it's fine to read, and it's fine to watch. I'm curious if part two, which is coming next year in January, will elevate the material even more. But that's, again, we'll see in the future how that goes. And then always a catch. Salad! Again, fun little villainous. Well, not really villainous. Well, it has a villainous type of spin where you have the prince projecting the hero, but it's just that.
And then she's like, wait a minute, I'm not even engaged to you.
How do you mix this?
You need glasses.
You need so many contacts. So what are the glasses? Whatever, man. Get your eyes checked, bro. Oh, no.
And then it's like, wait, actually, maybe can I marry
you? Or actually, no, better. Yeah, I know back in the day, you don't really always see who you're eloped to, who you're actually supposed to get married to. It's not like that. Get better, like... spies. Get better spies, please. Like, how do you...
Well, it's not even that. It's not even that. It's like, I know that my brother likes my fiancé, and my fiancé likes him, so I'm just trying to not be in public as much with her, you know, so that they can have time together. So it's not even that he's, like, unable to find out what she looks like. It is, like, you just messed up. Like, even your aide is, like, facepalming here in the background as you're trying to use this as, like, a stepping stone to, like, take down, you know, a corrupt family.
Yeah, that part was hilarious. But otherwise, it was kind of silly, but it was hilarious. But otherwise, the punching was fun. I did have a good time with it. It was, like, literally one of the few anime where I was like, I do want kind of more, but it looks like the more is going to be if I read the manga. Oh.
Which is on Manga Up. I've been reading more of it there. Yeah, it's a cute, cheerful series that says, yes, sometimes the solution is to punch people. You know, we've had a couple anime like that recently, and it's like, you know, sometimes the answer is in fact punching. And sometimes the answer is not punching. I felt like it reached a pretty good ending place there. Since I've been reading the manga, I'd been wondering what exactly they were going to choose as the ending place. I was thinking, oh, are they going to try to go all the way up to the wedding? I don't think we're going to have time for that. So... I would have liked it if they'd been able to cover the next arc as well, because a couple new characters get introduced, but they would have had to really rush the pacing to make that happen, so I think this was an adaptation where they made good, solid choices. Except for the ending song. I did not like the ending song in animation there, you know? That was just not my cup of tea. That was just kind of weird.
Excuse me. Okay. Literally, like, you just spoke, like, for, like, what, 3 minutes at best? Not back to me. But, these are the anime I...
You just covered it so well, Justin, you know.
These are generally anime I would more or less recommend. Some of these are more sequels, so if you haven't, like, checked these out already, I would recommend checking out those sequels, but if you are really interested in the franchise, it is what it is. But these are the ones I definitely enjoyed the most. Dorohedoro Season 2, it came back. It was as violent as I remembered it. It was as weird as I remembered it. And it's going to come back for season 3 at some point in your future. Hopefully faster than season 2 came. Like, oh man, Mappo. Took forever to get this out. Yeah, so many questions. So many things to wonder about our main cast of characters. Kaiman and Ikaido. And just so much intrigue, Helen. Just so much intrigue. I'm here with the weirdness. It's just very... It's just a very strange work. It really is. I don't know what Q Hayashi was thinking of creating this work, but it's somewhere in that it's in that mix of I admire it for its weirdness and not in the case of it's probably too weird and strange for me to really for my mind to really enjoy, but I enjoy this a lot. Let's see, Gals Can't Be Kind to Otaku, which I enjoy quite a bit because it stars a guy who really is just in the Glittermon, and it's not something you're supposed to like. It's a guy. It's not for guys. And he's really passionate about it though, and he finds two gals, Jaru basically, and one of them is just really into it, but she just won't admit it. She slowly admits it without realizing it. She basically admits it that she's really into Glittermon. And then yeah, the other gal who's just like not really into it at all, but she slowly kind of just admires it. And it's fine. It's a couple saying that she enjoys being. She enjoys it alongside her friends. It gets in a case where they both or all three are just basically friendly with each other. But of course, we have two girls and one guy. It's like okay, at some point the guy's got to choose, right? He's got to choose, right? But for his sake, he's just like everyone should be both of you. Considering just how I just didn't really expect to really have friends like this, so I just enjoy your both of your company. I enjoy it. I know the manga's out too. The Yen Press is—they're a little bit behind, unfortunately. I think their volume's gonna come out at some point later this year, so they got a ways to go to catch up to the anime a little bit. But I thought it was really solid, really good work. More of the anime. If there's another sequel to this, I will definitely check in for that. We have the conclusion to Dr. Stone with Science Future Part 3. The journey is over. It is over, Helen. They finally adapted the...
They made it to the moon?
They made it to the moon. Somehow came back from the moon. They spent literally...
Ooh, that's the hard part.
They literally spent all that time doing this. And they somehow... They came back with a gift from Y-Man. They somehow did it. They brought back this really extraterrestrial thing. They brought back to their primitive world. They did a little time skip where things got more advanced, but not quite there yet. And... spoiler alert, there's someone going to create something even crazier than going to space. A time machine. What? How? Well, you just have to hope and see how I do in the future. They're still in the project stage of it. But I guess the whole, obviously, main crust of it is with science. It obviously will keep evolving or day by day, week by week, month, year, years, decades, things progress. Sometimes in good ways, sometimes in bad ways. But that's the thing. It always, something new comes up. And the whole journey between from season one to the end. And then they brought back one of the season one. Something world. I forgot the main name of it. But it was that whole nostalgia blast. So just, wow, the journey is really over. Good morning, world. I think it's what it is. Good morning, world. So yeah, long journey over. Not sure if season three, part three was great, but I still really enjoyed just finishing it off and again reliving the whole ending all over again in anime form. We have a kind.
Oh, I was gonna say, if you want to take a break, I can talk about observation log.
I'm just trying to be really quick with what I have left that I just thought was okay. Really good and recommended, but not like my anime of the season. Kanae Banashi part one. I forgot to put that there, but Bakugo, we have a very strong and very energetic girl who just like, I want revenge on my father, but your father too, I want revenge on my father. She, Akane,
with Rakugo,
basically. She just really wants to get really good with Rakugo. We have really just a couple arcs in this where she is obviously learning about Rakugo, or she's really good at Rakugo. She's actually trained up a master essentially, but then she still has lots to learn about Rakugo, and then she's entered into the Karaku Cup, which is basically the main arc where she's technically a pro, but she has to basically compete or basically handicap herself by winning with Jugenbu. which is like, what? I can't go with Jugemu. Well, she's going to find a way somehow to do it. And she's got, if she doesn't do it, she's got to face, she's not going to be able to talk with the guy who basically banned her founder, and she wants to get revenge on that. So I thought it was pretty good at that. Pretty good. I enjoyed it a lot. I would have to like compare it to the manga and see how like if it made any like significant changes or anything like that. But I thought it was a really good Shonen Jump work. It's always been on the list of Kanabanashi's always been on my list to just read at some point, but just never got around to doing it. But at least for now, I'm just living Rakugo through the anime. And then
and you know, anime isn't a bad medium for Rakugo, given that, you know, it's an audio performance art.
Right. And then finally, before I take my break, we have the part one of ReZero Season 4. It's actually going to come back sometime in August. It's just not, it has, we've always had these odd type of breaks. These odd part, obviously they need breaks and everything, but like, oh, you get part one here and then part two here. My man Subaru just cannot get out of his own way. You go to a desert, things are going great, and then he decides he wants to go in this one room because he thinks that things are going to obviously change, and then I forgot my memory. Hi, guys. I came from another world. Subaru, what happened to you, bro? What happened? And then, of course, this new Subaru has a basic research.
The author ran out of ideas. He has basic
experience, return from death all over again. For what it's worth, when you're going to like 40-something volumes deep, you can only come up with so many ideas. But somehow, some way, White Fox adapts it really well, and it's just really just somehow enjoyable just seeing Super just find a way to just die every time and die in just the worst ways possible. And then in this case, Super is actually killing people. How are you doing this? You're not a killer, are you? But he finds a way somehow. So yeah, part two is going to be like him really essentially solving the puzzle, which is, again, that's basically what it comes down to in ReZero. He dies, he experiences so much like tragedy and loss and betrayal and everything, but it's all about finding a way to solve whatever puzzle is being laid out before him into a way that actually works, where he's not losing, not losing everybody, can advance the story. So that's what part two is going to be about. So looking forward to that when it comes out sometime in August.
All right, you can take your break, but it's not going to be a very long one since I've only got one to talk about in this section, because I've got three shows left and two of them we both watched. The one that Justin didn't watch, but I think he actually would enjoy, is an observation.
I just watched the dub. I haven't finished it yet because they didn't air the last episode of it for some reason, or the dub. Maybe just took a day off or a week off. I don't know.
Well, that means that my assessment that you would enjoy an observation log of My Fiancé Who Calls Herself a Villainess was correct.
Yeah.
Why are you still watching the dub if you're not even liking it?
I'm enjoying it enough, but as a standout, it's okay. It's fine. That's really all I have to say.
I never said standout. I said enjoy, okay? Fine. Just, you're the one who's out here already ranking stuff, and I'm just like, no rankings, no numbers, nothing. Folks should know that back in the day, Justin was the one who was pushing for us to actually put numerical reviews, numbers with our reviews, and I was the one who was like, no, I don't wanna, and he was like, you're gonna have to, so. Anyway.
Yeah, it was getting a lot of discussion.
I definitely recall you saying we're doing this and me being like, I don't want to.
I think it was less that, more like, I didn't like the points, like 3.5, 4.5, just like, just rate it 3 or 4, please.
I believe I told you I thought it was stupid. I believe I did not mince words. Anyway, so, anime. An observation log of My Fiancé Who Calls Herself a Villainess. It's not a wholly unique premise, since I have read a lot of villainous stories, folks. It's a lot. I don't know the number. If I did know the number, we might not want to know that number. But that means that I have read other ones where it is told more from the point of view of the male love interest than our quote-unquote main character, the villainess. And of course, I've seen plenty which are, we are following the plot of the story, we are trying to follow the plot of the story and it's not working, or we are giving no fucks and we are not following the plot of the story. This is in category 2, where Bertie has knowledge of the game and knows that if things go the way that Cecil is trying to make them go, it's going to end badly for everybody. And she is cautious about telling anyone too much about the game, Like, Cecil knows about the whole game bit, but nobody else does. And when things actually do come together, in, like, the last couple of episodes, and he's like, okay, can you tell me now why you were so determined that I had to get paired up with this character who is a horrible person that I didn't even like? And when Bertie goes through, like, okay, so in the endings where you don't get together with her, here's what happens to you. I just remember when I was reading the manga, I was thinking, damn, the story's got lore. Like, there were, like, it's like, okay, actual legitimate reasons for her to, you know, think that this was the best thing to do. But, as is the case of all these villainous stories, our characters have changed the world so much that that is no longer the state of play. We are not gonna be in, you know, some sort of, like, perpetual war afterwards. It's fine. So, it's a good ending. Although I was a little sad that they had to cut a little bit of the, I don't know if it was a bonus chapter or epilogue or what, but they did have to cut a little bit, which shows their future kids, which were just some segments that I found very funny. Cecil realizes that his son is just like him and goes, oh shit, I understand what my parents felt now. But maybe they'll be able to have that as, like, you know, a DVD bonus or something like that. Cute series. I enjoyed it. Also, both this and Always a Catch did not look like ass. It's been a while since we've gotten, you know, shoujo-focused, you know, romance stories, you know, villainous adjacent, that didn't look like ass, and I greatly appreciated that, you know? I'm not saying it looked spectacular, but I'm saying it looked better than some other things I've seen lately.
Yeah, there's one show I haven't actually watched it. I'm not sure I'm planning to watch it, but there are things that do something right or whatever. I think Annan had, like, a review of it, and they showed one... Oh, no, I think I actually know. I was reading a blog post about it, and they showed one screenshot of it, and it looked really bad. It looked awful.
Yeah, the thing I have come to realize is that there's a number of these stories that I enjoy reading in manga form, because if something's going a little slow, you can just skip ahead in pages. You know, that's fine. We're not writing book reports on any of these. But you don't have that flexibility in anime. So there's a bunch of things that are getting adapted right now, which I have read the manga for, and I'm like, you know, I don't really want to see the anime version of this, because I know that it's probably not going to look fantastic. The pacing's probably going to be a little wonky and all of that. So just, I think I'm just going to stick with manga for a bunch of these. But these two, since again, we've mentioned that Always a Catch is, like, villainous adjacent and some of it's set up. An observation log. Yeah, I can give, like, definite recommendations that if you enjoy the villainous subgenre, then yeah, these are two solid entries in the anime space.
Yeah, just like, I personally just like Always a Catch a little bit better. I guess the humor.
I liked Observation Log a little better, so, you know, we balance each other out here.
Right. And then these are pretty much the top of the top. Any season you go, or any year, these are pretty much recommended to give a watch to. We have Ramparts of Ice Part 1. That's right, Part 1, after wondering with its 14-episode length, is it going to be able to cover everything from the manga in this one season? The answer is no. They're going to come back for Part 2 in October. Let's go. Let's go.
I do think it's kind of funny that it's the same mangaka as you and I are polar opposites. And so this entire year we're going to have an anime Koja airing. It's just been polar opposites and Ice Rampart, like just bouncing
it's
in and Koja out.
Koja Asagawa's year, we're just living, or Koja Asagawa's world, we're just living in it. We're just living in her world. And we just get this hit of a baton pass from Koyun to Suzuki. Just back and forth. Put that in weird news too. Where do we have, like, one creator having to tap into them? We would get something like, I think maybe the closest in general will be, like, any of the Ruriko Takahashi stuff, where we get, like...
Yeah, that's exactly who I was thinking of, where, like, maybe that's happened with some of her work, but even
no,
then,
yet.
I don't remember
no,
when that would have been.
No, the thing is, it never has happened, like, in a calendar year. Like, we would get,
Wait, between Mal and Ranma One Half, have we had her?
It happened a while ago. Like, we used to have Ranma One Half, I mean, just, like, consecutively.
I meant... Yeah, didn't Ranma One Half, didn't the second half of that air in, like, the winter?
No. I think it was fall. For Ranma One Half, part two. But the main point is, I mean, just like consecutively, we would get like yearly stuff. That's why I was brought up Kentucky High School. Yeah, we were Sayatsuwa, then we had Rama 1/2. Now we have Mao that's happening, but we didn't get anything consecutively. Like we're getting with Polar Opposites and Round Parts of Ice. How do you light it's rare to light it up like that. That's like, that's the mind blowing part. You don't really, like, that's just really rare. So yeah, that's definitely weird, but obviously in a good way. And both, I think, for the most part, adapted pretty well. Now, I'm going to start with my misgivings for Rampart Slice first. I've seen screenshots from the manga, and I'm like, did Studio Kai kind of lift some of this from the manga itself and put it in the anime? I'm like, not the huge fan of that, personally.
I mean, we know that happened to Witch Hat.
It's not done in a way that's graceful. Like, Witch Hat, we'll obviously get to Witch Hat a bit, but I feel like it's kind of dry in some cases, kind of like, it smooths things over, but like the actual normal process animation, that's fine, but then it's like, it could have been better, because then you didn't watch Polar Opposites, it's just completely different. They do different things, don't get me wrong, but then you actually see like they're actually animating it, and then you see Studio Kai, what they're doing is like, okay, they're just bringing this over. But that's,
yeah, I felt like this was a show which didn't necessarily have to be super,
right,
duper
be super
animated for the story, at least.
But just like, I'm not sure I'm a fan of that. But obviously, it wasn't enough to really distract from the fact that this is a really great series. Basically, it's this drama, in high school drama, that you just like, oh god, will Koya be able to be able to help her save herself? Will all these characters be able to just like get along somehow? Wait, they are getting along. Okay, but when romance gets involved, they don't already getting along. I've been watching these Seven Dotis on Netflix. Been pretty good. I think personally, just the whole the humor. It's obviously not as much as Polar Opposites, but you still get that trademark humor from Agasawa, and then you also have just the fact that you have these characters, again, going through their growing pains, interacting with people, their past, how it interacts, how that's informed them into this current situation. It's working out really well to me. So yeah, I'm pretty much had a blast with this. Very much looking forward to how much part two is going to tear, right? After, especially what happened with the last episode, how much is part two going to make it hurt even more? How? Especially when we got that one character showing up to kind of cause issues.
Yeah, I really liked this one. I think I've said that I like this one so much, I'm like, okay, yeah, I definitely gotta see Polar Opposites now, since I just didn't have time for that back in the winter. Kind of funny that this one aired. Not in the winter, but the spring, you know.
I need the manga for this license, Rock Man Plus. I need a license. Well, I mean, I think it's like Manga Plaza or something like that. It's somewhere. But I want to get it in print, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been thinking that I feel like this one is an interesting complement to Journal with Witch, since both of these series are very much about how hard it is to fully know what someone else is thinking, and just how stressful that can be when you're thinking, you know, I think things are going well between the two of us, but what if it's not, and they're just trying to be polite and not telling me? Oh god. Which is something I can definitely relate to with anxiety. It's frustrating, especially since Koyun and company are in high school, where everybody is trying to figure this out. Everyone's got, you know, agendas, hormones, emotions, etc., running high. So it's a more stressful than usual situation. So I really liked that, and I also like that the characters, they feel like high schoolers, you know? They don't feel like mini adults. They don't feel idealized too much. They feel like kind of goofy kids, you know? Like, they'll be having conversations with each other, and then something will take, like, a weird left turn, and then they'll just have a fun little bit in between themselves for a little bit. And yeah, that feels very true to life to me. You know, it felt, I mean, I can't say authentic, because it's been too many years since I was a high schooler, so God knows what high schoolers are like these days. But it felt believable, you know? So, yeah, I enjoyed this one quite a bit. Much more than I expected to. So yeah, also looking forward to it returning in the fall. And then we have the big one. We have Witch Hat Atelier. Justin, I cannot believe that this one worked. I cannot believe that Bug Films did not, in fact, fall flat on their faces.
Yeah, they only fell flat in one particular area. The fact that they had to basically delay the series to spring, and then obviously they announced season two. But then this suggests that there was supposed to be more than the 13 episodes they had, but they just couldn't do it. They just could not.
I had been wondering the whole time if this was a secret split core, because Justin and I both read the manga, so I was thinking, okay, so I can tell from imagery in the opening and the ending sequence especially that we're going to get to the second test, but the second test arc is kind of long since it kind of merges with a subsequent arc right after. They kind of flow smoothly into each other, and stopping at any point before the end of that next arc is going to feel kind of cliffhanger-y. So that's why I was wondering, and no, we got about as big a cliffhanger as I expected. I was expecting actually one that was going to be slightly worse. And they have a trailer out for the next season, but no date yet, so who knows how long we're going to be waiting. So
that's really my only disappointment. Or general disappointment, I think, in general. Because I do kind of, it's just my personal thing, I think this could have used the 20-something episodes to really, I mean, it's pretty popular.
Oh yeah, I don't think anyone would disagree with you on that point.
Popular. Unless it gets like a tsunami or something like that, I think it really could be really popular if it had like 20 plus episodes. That's just my thinking.
And I feel like it's been pretty big even within the context of the popularity of the anime these days. It feels like this
overseas,
one it is doing pretty well.
I think in Japan, I feel like it could have used it in Japan.
Oh, I mean, like even here in the US, apparently the manga is selling like hotcakes. Like, Volume 8 was just out of print everywhere in the U.S. for a little bit. What were some of the other things I was thinking of? As I mentioned earlier, it was kind of funny. I got to it slightly after some other people did, just because I was finishing up winter shows. I was late. And it was funny that there are so many very visually interesting shots in this. And I remember, oh, that was a specific panel in the manga, or, oh, that was a specific chapter cover in the manga, since Shirahama just has a great sense for framing, in addition to a lot of really great senses when it comes to art. Like, hers is very well-polished in a number of areas. So yeah, I do think it's kind of funny, because it's like, some of the most visually interesting moments from there do build very, very heavily off of what she did in the manga. Obviously, it's animated here, you know, and some flares have been given there, but I don't think it's actually been given as much visual flair as people think by the adapting staff. I think a lot more of this comes from the original manga than most people who haven't read the manga are realizing.
I think pretty much, like...
So if I see anybody talking about, oh, I don't want something that's a one-to-one adaptation, you know, like what Witch Hat did. And it's like, I will fight them if I start seeing anybody talking like that. It's going to be like, no, like, hang on. We're going to a library? We're checking out a shit ton of books? I will make you understand that you were incorrect.
The only thing I think really wrong that they really, like, flexed out was episode 5 with Ripley basically summoned the water dragon. That was definitely where they definitely went over. The manga did not do anything.
The fire dragon?
The water dragon, whenever it went to the...
I thought it was...
Well, basically that dragon...
Are we talking about... Are we talking about the dragon fight or
the
river?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I thought that was fire, but I could be wrong.
Well, basically when he summoned the dragon, when he saved the girls, they really animated the heck out of that. That was the one going to the manga first, but it's not the same. It's not. Mm-hmm. But you can't really regulate Shihama's style like that. But yes, visually, Bug Films pretty much did what they could, and I think it did a really good job. Visual-wise, pacing-wise, I think it all pretty much worked. My only other, quote-unquote criticism is the fact that I think it built up. We have the brim caps! Where are they? Or the brim hats! Where are they? And they kind of built up towards the end, what they really are capable of. I think that's the part's a shame, but it's really like a minor thing. I think the main point is we have to establish the main cast of characters, Obviously, the future girl was trying to find a way for Coco to save her mother. Then they also have Creepy in the background being, I need to find them. I must find them.
I've got sad anime backstory.
But yes, when Butch Head Season 2 eventually comes out, I will be there. I will be there.
We will all be there. Oh, since you've been watching a bunch of dubs, are you watching the dub for this one? Yeah, I was wondering how you thought about the choice to give a lot of the characters different accents, since...
It makes...
I have not been watching the dub, but when I read about that, I was like, that is an interesting choice.
It makes sense. I think also just to add a little bit to the story at the same time, like, oh yeah, Coco's joined the Water Witches, and the witches are very protective.
They're British. Or, no, they're European.
Very protective of what they do, so... It actually kind of enhances.
So protective that they've become isolated, develop their own accent? Or are we saying that they are... I mean, the equivalent of that is saying that they're hillbillies, you know? So.
I think it's an inspired choice. I think also just to kind of show the type of witches that exist in Witch Hat, which makes sense, personally. Like, when you're reading certain things. And it's kind of like a thing about certain works. We have different type of characters from different type of world, backgrounds and countries and stuff like that. I think the fact that they had a chance to add it like that for the dub, I think is a pretty good choice. It worked out. They also made sure that they could do the voices. I mean, you could bring somebody over to do it.
I have heard differing opinions on that point.
Interesting, because I've grossly heard, at least on Twitter, that they did a pretty good job. I'm guessing.
I am just of the opinion that this is part of the American love of all things British and the belief in British superiority, and it's like, come on, guys.
So you think a regular English...
We stopped being British 250 years ago.
A normal cast would have worked better?
I think it probably would have worked as well. And I'm never a fan of people trying to do accents that aren't their natural accents, since... Yeah, some people can do it, like, shit, I'm blanking on it. The guy who did Finn... in Star Wars. I am blanking on his name right now, but I had no idea for a long time he was British, because he does that good of an American accent.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Finn. I'm not a Star Wars. He's black?
Okay, yeah, the John black guy.
Boyega, I think.
Yeah, John Boyega. Yeah, I did not know he was British for the longest time, because he does a really good American accent. But, yeah, in general, I am just too used to Americans being really bad at British accents. And then here they were like British, Irish. I think they were doing a Dutch one for
They had a couple of different ones from what I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, all of them were supposed to be different accents. I know that each of Coco's classmates and Quiffy were all supposed to have different accents.
I know they got
So yeah, that's why
I'm
curious.
Person for Ricci, I believe. So I think they kind of...
Australia is famously not a part of Europe. I don't care what Eurovision says.
Okay. But the point is, I think they casted as well as they could have to make sure they did the voices correctly. That is my thoughts, I think. I don't think they really messed up for any particular way. I guess in general, this is a good chance... Or this is, I guess, a good discussion on how do you... Or English dubbing and how do you handle... making sure you do the best stuff as possible. Is it actually having normal voices or mixing it up by having different types of voices for most of the cast of characters?
And I just think it is just a symptom of America's yearning for what they view as a more perfect identity with the British English and their traditions and customs and how they appear to have a more harmonious society than we do. And I think that all y'all are weak for believing that. Not you, Justin. Not the you, Justin, but, like, the folks who think this. You.
Yeah,
it's
just like, is it really that big of a deal? That's all I'm like, oh, God. Is it like this? Yeah. Oh, God.
Social linguistics are a thing! But anyway, we've made it through the anime, and it's time for the weird news, and you are informing me the anime is over.
This, I think, is also announced... actually, I didn't check.
Or at least that the anime industry is over.
I want to make sure, because I saw this announced during AX. I don't think it was announced at an actual AX event. Let me see. Okay, yeah, it's not put on as AX. Okay, it's not... I guess it's not part of AX. But the point is, it's over, Helen. That's it. It is a wrap, Helen. We've had Crypto.
We had a good
Crypto
run.
I think, or maybe NFT anime announced. I don't think we actually had real voice actors for those. Or yeah, okay. Normal voice actors. I guess I should say usual voice actors for those. I think we had a crypto anime, cryptocurrency anime. We've had those. I'm sure there's been an AI produced work anime that's happened over the past couple of years. I think we even talked about it at some point too. But we got a company called Puri Prints. They're an AI animation company. They announced an anime called Cyber Chair Detective Charlotte Dead Man's Hand, which is based off Noriyang's web novel. It's only a short anime, yes, but yeah, as you can see, it's AI animated. Why did I say it's over, Helen? Why did I say why have we been over dramatic about this being the end of anime as we know it?
I mean, part of it is that under U.S. copyright law, you cannot copyright anything that's created by AI, so good fucking luck enforcing any copyright violations of that. That could end your company.
And, I didn't tweet this out. There was one quote tree who had the same thought as I did, though. Why does this one girl look like Kyoko Kirigiri from Danganronpa? Why does this one guy look like Gojo from Jujutsu Kaisen? Why does it look like him?
We know what that theft engine
why?
Was trained
and,
on.
And then here's the one where I'm like, yeah, it might be over. Why are there known voice actors taking part in this? Why is Tomokazu Sugita taking? Why? There's one voice actor I want to point out who's also in this. Why is Hina Yomiya in this? Why? Who told them this? Did they lie? Be like, hey, there's this anime that's happening. Look, okay, here's the thing I'm going to choose to believe. Here's my canon theory. I have no other belief about this. They told the voice actors and the voice acting agency, his anime is coming out in a couple years or whatever. It's in the development. We need you to do the voices of this character. We're not showing you the project or anything like that. We're not showing you any of that. We just want you to have the... Here's the script. Here's the voice lines. Just voice. That's it. That is my excuse that I'm putting it forth for these characters, for these voice actors. They had no clue this AI anime that they did. No clue.
I hope that they had no clue, because if they did and they took the job anyway, just... And then... Do I need to do the other AI one?
I kind of need a break, but I could also go through this too. Just... And then I guess... Okay, here's what's going to happen, Helen. What's going to happen is... I'm going to take this manga translation thing. You can take the rest of the weird news that happened. How about that, Helen? Is that fine?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I can do that.
Just like that, listeners. Just like that. So, we have the manga. We talk about energy being over. Yes, now the manga energy is also over. It's funny because I saw that...
I asked Justin if the light novel industry is over, and he says yes, it was once we accidentally named a character Latina.
How do you come back from your light novel? And then we also had I think Alcoholist had a light novel winner win their contest, and it was all AI created. That's when I knew it was really over. That's when I knew it was a wrap. It was wraps for light novels. We have to hope that any licenses for light novels has no AI stench in it. But we already I had no hope for that. But now for this, we have the Japan news. They reported a few weeks ago that the Japanese Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry is considering providing subsidies of 11.5 billion yen, which is about US 71 million, to 15 eligible media companies aiming to increase overseas sales. Okay. The subsidies would aim to encourage the companies to utilize generative AI to translate their works.
Yes, because famously the problem is that we don't have enough translators, not that we're not paying people enough for the work they are providing. Or also, famously, it's not like the U.S. market isn't already just absolutely awash in 200 or 300 new releases every single month. We totally have room to, take in more things translated by the slot machine.
This is horrifying. Anyways, so they had to announce the 15 companies that I guess taking part in this, or they're going to actually provide this money to. However, the Japan News expects them to go towards companies like Shueisha, Kodansha, Square Enix, and Entity Software for manga, Crunchyroll and Bandai Namco Holdings for anime, and others in the music, gaming, and live action sectors. So, from a manga standpoint, and then also, we know Shueisha and they had to deal with Orange. Excuse me. Yeah. Sorry. So we know what Shueisha, they kind of had to deal with Orange and their AI-assisted nonsense. They've been working with them for the past couple years now, so I wouldn't be surprised if they did their part of this. Kodansha, get out of there! Square Enix, get out of there! And T Sofa, get out of there too. Anyways, whoever's involved with this, get out! Get out now! Yeah, it's bleak, Helen. It's bleak. I think the point is, I think sales over in Japan and is I guess we just stand still. We're not really seeing much growth, so perfectly it made sense to expand and go overseas. And it's not like they haven't done it before. It's been a thing they've done the past couple of years, but now I guess they're thinking we gotta be more aggressive. We gotta get this out there quickly and more efficiently. Let's turn the AI slop.
Yeah. If I step on the rake one more time, it's gonna work.
It's just not great, Helen. It's just not great. We're in a state where we're just like, we know we want to get this out here and we want to get out fast. And you know what's funny? I think back to how we had this long thing about Scanlations, how they pump out stuff faster and everything. But now it's going to be officially pumped out faster.
A lot of the Scanlation groups are using AI these days, too. Yeah, I regret to say a lot of them are using machine translation.
But the point is, we all keep asking ourselves, we want the best quality work, or we want at least the author's intentions. We want that represented as accurately as possible. But if you do it this way, you're not getting accurate. It's just not happening. You're doing it in an inefficient way. You're doing it like in a stupid way. You're lying to yourself. You say that, oh, yeah, we get this AI translated, localized, and this presents the author in the best possible light. You're lying. Just get somebody that can actually translate their work properly and go from there. That's really what it comes down to.
Listen, it is one thing when I decide to point my phone at the computer screen and try to use Google Translate to translate a Japanese raw manga for myself, because nobody's making money off of this. I can't even do it very long because that uses up your phone's battery like you wouldn't believe. That is a very different situation than, y'all expect me to pay you money for doing this? Right. Get out of here. So
this reminds me that we have Imakui. They now say launched their premium subscription service this week. I will be stunned if anybody wants to subscribe to that. I mean, granted, there'll be enough people that are desperate enough to, or foolish enough. Well, okay, I won't be mean. Moronic enough to subscribe to this. And think that they're getting the best representation of AI-assisted work. I guess they think it's going to be the future. But I'm just telling you right now, it's not really...
Have I told you that some of the Scanlation groups, now you have to buy chapters from them now?
I guess this is the future we want, Helen. I guess this is the future people want. They want very inaccurate stuff.
No.
That you're paying money for. When, personally, you can just go online, find the raws, and translate it yourself. I don't know if these companies realize this, but people can do this by themselves if they want to. If you want to get real and be like,
you have the power.
Be like devil's advocate. These translators suck. They put their politics or whatever in there. Blah blah blah. The point is, if you get an AI translated, that can be the same thing. On that case, it could also be the case where your people just go to get the raws and translate it themselves. And look at that, you wasted no money, and just like that, you're not actually being able to support creators because you didn't pay money to buy an AI subscription. You see this confusion? It's not gonna work. It's just not. It's really just it's just not great. And now we got the government getting involved in this. It's not great. What can I say? I can't say anymore, Helen. There's just not much I can say. It's just really oppressive.
All right, so we will move on to the rest of the weird news then. So, I know it had already been announced that the Green Yuri series, official name, the guy she was interested in wasn't a guy at all, was getting an anime project. And at AX, Crunchyroll revealed that they will be the ones streaming it. The impression seems to be that they are co-producers to some degree. I don't know the details, but they were showing the trailer for it, showing that the song for the opening is going to be Breed by Nirvana. Cue everybody joking how much of the production budget went to just that license, because yeah, that can't be big. And then Dave Grohl came on stage to announce parts of this. I don't know exactly which parts, but there are photos. He was there announcing it, and he said stuff that, like, Kurt Cobain would have loved this series, which is just kind of funny, you know, in its own way, that, you know, the band that these fictional girls love so much would have probably have been enjoyed by the real-life performer. Also, people were talking about the funniest thing from this is not actually that, but that people will be learning from this, that apparently Kurt Cobain had what I could sum up as some gender stuff going on. Which, yeah, was news to me. I did not know this, so I'm going to be looking that up later.
One other thing.
People were, in fact, referencing the geologist meme from XKCD, the one where it goes, well, the average layperson doesn't know about this, but surely everyone still knows about obscure geology thing. Yes, 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 of course, everybody knows about that, at least.
The only thing I want to add, I don't know if you saw this, but apparently it's a great, there is a playlist for this series that's out there.
Okay, oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I imagine, like, how expensive is this anime going to be if they get any particular songs from the manga? how much did Crunchyroll and the Japanese production committee pay for all that?
And in speaking of, oops, we didn't pay or properly license things. Excuse me. Bandai Namco Filmworks and Bandai Namco Pictures issued an apology on Thursday for the unauthorized reference to various intellectual properties in the latest Sergeant Frog film. In particular, the rights holders for Hajime Isama's Attack on Titan manga had clearly expressed their wishes on such a reference in advance, but, quote, a serious communication breakdown, unquote, within Filmworks and Pictures had led to the film going ahead with the reference anyways. The ANN forums are like, man, you can't even, like, put in a good faith reference to a piece of toilet paper these days. So, I don't actually know how the reference worked in conjunction or within the movie itself. I went to the ANN forums in case anybody happened to know, like, how blatant this reference most likely was. But, folks, you gotta remember, like, if you're in Japan, you gotta do this because all y'all are litigious about this. And I say this as an American, you know, a very litigious country. And then finally, there has been an announcement that there is a Persona live-action TV series in the works at Netflix. Which Persona series, you're asking? Good question! We don't know which of the games it's supposed to be about. You know? We've got some staff, you know, we've got people who are supposed to be, you know, the showrunner and executive producers, you know, and stuff like that, but we don't know which one it is. You know, there's been Variety counts it as 6 main entries in the franchise to date. Persona 6, which has been as of late formally confirmed to actually be in production. It's only taken them like 10 years. And there's another 15 related spin-offs. Obviously we've had multiple remakes, anime and manga and light novel adaptations, etc. So, yeah, they're probably going to adapt 4 or 5, you know, since those are the most recent and those are pretty popular, but, we shall have to see. One of my friends was quipping that he would accept a Persona 2 adaptation if we could get 10,000 weeks of discourse over the Hitler stuff. Thank you, Adam.
say what?
That was the blue sky link. I saw you clicking.
How do you know I clicked it? How?
I can see where your cursor is! You can see where my cursor is too, can't you?
Maybe.
Justin, this is how Google Docs has always worked.
I'm trying to find something funny in time, but I don't know if I actually did it right. I'm pretty sure I didn't. Let's see if I actually make it work.
I double checked to make sure that Adam's posts weren't protected so you could see them. Otherwise, I was going to send you a screen cap of it this time.
I can't GIF properly. Anyways. That is, yeah, I'm already curious about how bad this Persona movie is going to be. I hope these people are actually, like, Persona knowledgeable and everything, but I have no faith. No faith whatsoever.
All right, folks, we have come in at under 2 hours. Barely. Thank God. But yeah, Justin, let's wrap it up, because I think both of us need dinner by this point.
Did it, Helen. We found a way to just survive it and everything. We just, by the way, what I just said her is my reaction to that whole Hitler thing. That was my reaction.
Listen, I have not played Persona 2 either, but if you tell me there's Hitler involved with it, I look at Atlas's, you know, previous series and I go, yeah, that tracks. You're not surprising me.
But anyways, no more podcast. I am podcasted out. This was a you know what's funny, Helen? This probably isn't our longest podcast we've ever done, but I'm already just like, but we survived all the licenses, the AX apocalypse, we survived it. So yeah,
I survived the 4th of July in D.C. Yeah, I could hear the fireworks in my apartment last night. I live several miles away. I should not have been able to last night.
Yeah, whatever. It's just fireworks. Whatever.
We are surviving this weather.
It's just July 4th fireworks. It is what it is. Anyways, you can find me still on everybody's favorite website, the Twitter. Wait, it's called X now? Still a favorite now? It sucks. Anyways, @Kami_Nomi. You can... again, see much Three Houses retreating, and maybe at some point Fortress Weave, if it's good enough. We're still a ways away from Fortress Weave, but there's been dripping some Fortress Weave information over the past week or so. So it looks like that's got to be how they're marketing it. You can obviously check out DHC.com for recent features. You can subscribe to... You can check out the Twitter accounts or the social media accounts in general. So Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky for Twitter, for the OSG, got the AX tweeting catch-ups, because it's like, okay, too much news, lots of it, I'm just going to post it very slowly, very, very slowly, and then man, some random stuff that gets sent to the email address we have, and get you the OSG podcast, so I have podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, as you any RSS if you have, subscribe by email.
The only thing I know so far about Fire Emblem Fortune's Weave is that there's a Brazilian Miku in it, which looks pretty cool. That's all I know so far, though. I expect Justin will update me once more news comes out. But Justin's going to have to update me about that over online or Discord or stuff, because he is not on Blue Sky, and I am not on Twitter. You can find me over on Blue Sky at Wandering Dreamer, and you can find the other podcast I co-host on your normal podcasting services at Manga in Your Ears. On Blue Sky, we are lumped together under the Taiku Podcast handle. That is T-A-I-I-K-U Podcast. And that is also the name of the website where we put everything in case, you know, we need somewhere to host this stuff after all. So, until next time, folks. Bye. See ya!